Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 414 of Retro Encounter, RPG Fans Podcast about old stuff, and sometimes slightly less old stuff. But today we got some old stuff for you, because we are talking about Ark the Lad, the original game in the trilogy that came out in America as Ark the Lad Collection. And we have a lot to cover. It's got an interesting history. It's got an interesting progression throughout the series. But before I dive into that, I am obviously not Mike Solosi. I am Wes Iliff, your temporary host for these two episodes on Ark the Lad and Ark the Lad 2. But I am not alone, because I would not do well alone. I actually have some lovely guests, including Audra Bowling.
Hello.
Ben Love.
Hi.
And Nick Mandracina.
Saving the best for last, huh?
I mean, how else was I going to roll? I'm kidding. You both are lovely. Ark the Lad is an interesting game series, because this is a game, the original Ark the Lad, was a launch title in Japan for the PS1 when Sony was saying, hey, RPGs are pretty popular. We should invest a little bit more into there. So they found and partnered with G-Craft, who had released Front Mission on the SNES, and made this cool little tactical RPG, classic RPG hybrid. Now, we didn't get it right away. This ended up actually being one of the last projects working designs ever put together, because they had been trying to get licenses for this for ages, and Sony just kept saying, you know, RPGs don't matter in America, so we're just not going to release them, especially this, you know, purely 2D animated 10-hour tactical RPG. They didn't have a lot of interest in bringing that over here. But eventually, after the release of FF7, Sony kind of saw the error of their ways, saw that, oh, RPGs can be a big hit in America, and allowed the license. And then working designs had to delay over and over again, because by that point they were translating three games, technically four if you count Ark Arena. And it took them years of delays to finally get this out, being something of a swan song for the PS1 by the time it actually came out. A lot of folks played this on the PS2 by the time it came out. But I am interested in the rest of my couch here. How did you all come across Ark the Lad? Is this your first playthrough? Is this something that you've played before and you're getting into again? Let's start with Ben Love.
Yeah, so I originally got interested in the series because I'm a big fan of the Front Mission games. And so looking into like the history of G-Craft, and I learned that they made the Ark the Lad games for Sony. And I got the classics, the PSN classics on my PS3. This was probably, 8 years ago or so, and played through them. And I really loved the series. I'm a big just tactics RPG person. So it was really interesting to see like a fairly different take compared to the more like gritty political thriller kind of style of Front Mission. And then to have more of a like traditional like fantasy, but also science fiction a little bit. More traditional feeling tactics RPG from them also. So
yeah, it's much more of a traditional Japanese style RPG series than it is what you would expect out of a tactical RPG series.
Yeah, absolutely.
the best comparison I can come up with is like Shining Force, but less complex than Shining Force in most respects. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you've really got characters that you're dealing with. Characters are the most important, and they're not just important to combat, but they're important to the story. You have a small group of characters. Those are the people you're going to be following. And you're going to be following them through, you know, a traditional linear structured story rather than these big overarching political campaigns that tactical RPGs are known for. Mm-hmm. How about you, Nick?
My first playthrough was about 6 years ago, and it was based on a recommendation by Wes Iliff.
Funny that.
Yeah. You recommended the game a little hard to me. So I picked up, I thought I picked up the classics for the Vita, 1 and 2. But apparently I was wrong, as I found out when I signed up for this podcast, and I had only purchased the first one. So, and I guess I had only played through the first one. So 2 will be a first playthrough for me, but I have played 1 before. And I do like these tactical RPGs. I had forgotten a lot about Ark the Lad, so this was a fun refresher playthrough for me.
That's awesome. Digging into Ark the Lad 2 for the first time is going to be a major shell shock kind of moment compared to Ark the Lad 1.
I hope so.
What's interesting about the development is that originally the story of Ark 1 and Ark 2 were meant to be a single game. But as they were aiming for Ark to be a launch title, they just didn't have time to complete this big epic story that they had planned. So they hacked off kind of the beginning of Ark's story, made that into its own game. It was ridiculously popular in Japan, selling over 1 million units.
It's crazy, too, because the development of Ark the Lad 1 is concurrent with the development of Front Mission, and then the development of Ark the Lad 2 was also happening at the same time as Front Mission 2, which, if you know anything about that game, is also a really huge and very like graphically impressive game for the PlayStation. So that they were able to make like those two pretty sizable RPGs at once, it's pretty crazy. And also, like, you could see how they were like, we need to rush Ark the Lad 1 out the door and we'll finish the story with another entry.
Front Mission 2 is getting a remake, right?
It already came out, actually.
It already came out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Front Mission getting some love now. For the first time maybe ever in America, if we're being honest.
Yes. Long overdue.
Audra, how about you? What's your history with Ark the Lad?
Well, actually, my first exposure to the series was the anime.
Oh, I
picked
awesome.
That up out of curiosity, and it was decent and had some surprisingly dark moments, and I found out it was kind of based off of Ark the Lad 2. Mm-hmm. So when the Ark the Lad collection came out, I actually got it as a birthday gift, and then I never was able to find time to play it. So when this podcast came up, I was like, yes!
It's time.
My goal, yes, it's time. So now I'm playing the Ark the Lad 1 and Ark the Lad 2 for the first time. And I'm really loving it, especially I enjoy it a lot more compared to the anime.
Yeah, the anime was a slightly lower budget experience, to be sure. And maybe didn't move the plot along at the fastest pace, whereas, well, we'll get into Ark the Lad 2 next episode. Let's not spoil too much of that. But Ark the Lad 1 is almost like a tech demo for Ark the Lad 2 in a lot of ways. It gives you a bite-sized chunk. You get to see kind of what they were going for with the combat and with the characters and with the structure of the game, only for them to expand upon it in the future, which is a really interesting, you don't often see that dynamic with games like this. But I guess we can just dig into the game at this point, can't we?
Oh, yeah.
So Ark the Lad is the story of the titular lad named Ark, a young boy from the village of Toville, who we find out near the beginning of the game had a father named Joshua, who left 10 years ago, 10 years prior to the start of this story, to go stop something amorphously bad, promising that... whatever he was stopping would resurface 10 years in the future, and Ark would need to be ready to face it when that time came. But we don't start immediately with Ark. We start instead with Shrine Priestess Kukuru, one of your first two playable characters, and something of a reluctant Shrine Priestess. Her job basically in life is to be married off to the royal family and... essentially used as a figurehead for her mystic powers. And otherwise she needs to spend her life guarding a flame that has been burning for over 3,000 years called the Flame Scion. Kukuru is led by her town mayor up to the mountain. The town mayor seems, according to my notes, super duper shady.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That mare's up to no good.
You know, this is a series that doesn't really play low and slow with its bad guys. You get the bad guy music. You get some maniacal laughter. They all seem to mention someone named Andel at some point, which the mayor mentions being rewarded by someone named Andel for pushing Kukuru to go and extinguish the Flame Scion rather than face her destiny. And so she does it. She goes up to the top of the mountain, extinguishes a 3,000-year-old flame, and all of a sudden the first blizzard in 10 years hits the village of Toville in the continent of Seiria, where we start.
It should be noted that she feels bad about it.
She immediately has some misgivings.
Yeah, she realizes it was a mistake.
And doesn't the demon just like, he like pops right up like immediately after.
The Ark Ghoul, as he's called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Ark, A-R-K, just to be clear.
He's like, he also seems kind of friendly. Like, Ark walks up to him and he's like, hey, are you the dude that extinguished the flame? Like, he's just looking for the person who did it. And like, people are just like picking fights with him.
Yeah, he does briefly mention, you know, destroying life on Earth and everything.
Aside from that, he's a pretty friendly dude. Got to zero in on his one flaw.
Now, this is where Ark comes in, because his dad disappeared that night 10 years ago on the only other blizzard that had been seen in 10 years' time. So Ark goes, grabs his dad's armor and weaponry, and decides, I'm going to go march up the mountain and see if I can figure out what potentially killed my dad. He runs into Kukuru pretty quickly, who says, okay, you can go relight the flame for me if you want, essentially, without a whole lot of fight. And so he heads on up, and before long finds the Ark Ghoul. The Ark Ghoul is like, oh yeah, yeah, I was part of all of this badness 10 years ago. Sure thing, but bad news, I'm way stronger than you. And Ark's story ends very abruptly as Ark is killed by the Ark Ghoul almost immediately.
The Ark Ghoul has a very M. Bison-esque like response to Ark asking about his dad.
Oh yeah, like the... it was just another day of the week.
Like he's like, are you the one that killed my dad? And he's like, I've killed like thousands of dudes. It was probably one of them was probably your dad.
Impossible to say for sure.
It would be impossible to tell.
But of course it doesn't end there. Ark gets revived and empowered by some kind of guardian that we don't get a lot of details on yet, but we will, because there are MacGuffins to find, and Guardians are among the many, many MacGuffins that are the Ark the Lad series will bring to bear. So he revives with the ability to fight demons and monsters and all of the bad things that pop up all over the world. And sure enough, fights his way up the mountain and extinguishes the flame, or reignites the flame. That's a very important distinction that I should probably keep clear.
Yeah.
Right, because he has to go back later and breathe.
Yeah, that thing is just lit and extinguished, like no big deal. Apparently, the magic is just based on whether or not there's fire there. There are no ceremonies to go along with relighting it or extinguishing it.
It is such a bizarre, like, plot point. Like, how they just, like, extinguish it and then immediately relight it, and then they have to go extinguish it again later.
Yeah, there's a lot of times like that in the story where like there's just like a thing that like they has to happen because they say it happens, it needs to, and then it happens and then it's like never referenced again, or it's not super important or clear why it was important to begin with. Yeah.
It's like they had two writers and like one would like come up with something and then instead of the other one going like, "Oh, we should go back and change this." They were like, "Yeah, just throw
yes,
it in."
And that's the number one rule of improv and Ark the Lad.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of yes and writing.
I mean, it's a traditional RPG story, and Ark and Kukuru, at least in this game, are very traditional RPG protagonists. What do y'all think of, you know, the initial cast, these two cast members? Did they stand out as anything more to you, or were they pretty well just RPG protagonists one and two?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're very one-dimensional, and that's like something that's true of the characters in this game just in general. You know, Ark is the determined hero, and that's pretty much like all you get out of him. And Kukuru is the, well, I mean, she's like the woman.
Yeah.
She's very much
100%.
To get a little bit ahead of the story, there is a romance subplot. Okay. Not so much a romance subplot, so much as a kiss that the plot said to do.
Yeah, it just like comes out of nowhere.
It feels as if
nowhere.
The characters read the script and were like, oh, this is what we do next. Okay.
Say Robin gets another turn.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a couple moments where they try to like have at later in the story where it'll just be like Ark and Kukuru like fighting a battle or like left behind by like, you know, some circumstance or whatever. And it's just them together. But there's not really a lot of like dialogue or actual writing to support.
Yeah, why they did that. Yeah, I complained to Wes about that this morning, actually, this very morning. I complained about that stupid elevator fight.
I remember that one.
No narrative sense. They just, it's like, bud, you're already on the elevator. Just leave.
Yeah, it's like they realized they didn't have enough like moments with just them together.
They tried to get one in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do admit I like Kukuru's more in the game than I did in the anime. Where she was just kind of there. She has more spunk.
Yeah, she actually has that little bit of like doubt about her place in the world and not wanting to, you know, sacrifice herself essentially to her role, which is respectable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I will. Her motivation is like very, I think, very relatable.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't become much more than that. But I mean, that's still more than like half the characters have. So
definitely.
Yeah.
I think Ark bothered me so much because his personality is kind of all over the place. Like when he first meets Kukuru, he acts like Kiryu Kazuma. He's just like, no, I'm the hero. I'm going to go find out what happened to my dad. And then like, then he gets knocked out by the Ark ghoul and the light's talking to him. And he's like, what are you talking about? What are you saying? And the thing's like, I'm giving you power to like fight demons. And he's like, what are you talking about? You know? And it's just like, are you like the dumbest guy
in the
world?
It's so hard when you are familiar with RPG tropes, but the character seems wholly unfamiliar with RPG tropes.
It's like characters in a zombie movie, you know, because like, and the only way that works is if characters in zombie movies have never even heard of a zombie movie before. And like, so the characters in RPGs like can't understand RPG tropes. Ark bothered me just with, and another thing is like later you're like getting onto the airship and he's like, you ready to go? And your options are like, no, or aye, aye, let's go, Mon Capitan, or something like that. And I'm like, what? Who is this guy?
Classic working designs. Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense in the context of Ark because he's just like so serious and kind of stupid and then like throws that in there. I mean, I loved it, but.
Yeah, that's. I think it's just them trying to punch up dry, a very otherwise dry.
But in combat, Ark is actually kind of baller. He's your traditional main character who can cast spells and attack. But maybe the most important thing about him is that within a few levels, he counterattacks everything that enemies throw at him, and gets full attacks. Whether you know, no matter which direction he's attacked from. He can sit there and wipe out half of a crew just on counterattacks, which is kind of a thing in Ark the Lad. It becomes a thing with some characters in this series.
Yeah, he is super broken. He has really good magic attacks that hit a lot of enemies. He's very tanky. He has good physical attacks. He has a few like equipment items that are exclusive to him that are very useful. Like one that rejuvenates his MP every turn.
Oh my god, so useful.
Super useful.
And total healing!
Oh,
total healing?
We need to talk briefly about the voice samples in this game, because they're amazing. every spell, every attack has some unique voice sample that goes along with it. They're all still in Japanese, but most of them are English words. And you get just the best delivery.
A lot of... burn, Burn so Groundo. Yeah. A lot of that.
It's one of my favorite little bites, and apparently it was one of Victor Ireland's too, because there's a making of disc that comes along with the full collection of Ark the Lad, and he talks about what a big fan he is of some of these characters purely because of their battle yells, especially Chungara, who we'll get to and we'll probably have to discuss in some terms.
Oh, yeah, he's a little problematic.
A little rough.
Kukri, on the other hand, as the girl in the RPG, and I say this with tongue-in-cheek and unfortunate tenor, she's the healer, and that's mostly what she does. She has decent enough attack for a healer, but she heals status effects, and she revives. That's what she's up to.
Yeah. She has that one laser attack, and that's pretty... That's sometimes useful.
Yeah, I used it a lot in the arena section, where you have a bunch of dudes lined up and her big laser will just take out five of them.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that didn't ever... I mean, like, I had, you know, like most Ark the Lad 1 players, I had trouble keeping the party all around the same level. But her laser...
Impossible.
I was really disappointed that like her laser attack didn't get like, I thought that like it would be really good to have that superpowered at some point, and it just like it gets a little bit better, but that's it.
Yeah, it's never the most efficient use of your time, unless you just don't have anything else to do with Kukuru. She's got plenty of MP for the most part, so you can throw some down on occasionally less important things.
Yeah, I will say the utility characters are pretty important, because so much of the game boils down to keeping Ark and Tosh alive and in as tip-top shape as possible. So there's a lot to keep all the utility characters busy doing that.
Yeah, they end up being vital, if not the most interesting, mechanically.
Yeah.
So from there, Ark kind of gets a little bit of a reputation for, you know, being this big, strong warrior who can take out the monsters. And not long after sealing the ghoul again, is summoned to the Kingdom of Palencia, also on the Saria continent, kind of the ruling nation of this continent. As he leaves the village, Kukuru separates for a bit and says, as soon as I learn how to use these powers that I've got, I'll follow right along. Thus taking you back down to one party member yet again. sometimes they take their time giving you party members. By the end of the game, you'll have 7 of varying degrees of usefulness, and we'll talk about each one as they come up in the plot. Like the next one, as soon as we go to Palencia Castle, we see a bunch of soldiers marching out to defeat some monsters kind of out on the plains, and following along seems to be a member of the marching band. All of the soldiers are a little bit chubby, but Poco is like half the size of the rest of them as well. And is constantly tripping and running while holding his hat. There are some nice little 2D animations that give more character to these, you know, otherwise, you know, kind of flat characters. And Poco is one of the ones who has the most going on as kind of the scared, clumsy little guy who has to learn to be a warrior. There is a devious minister at the castle. Of course, there has to be someone whispering in the king's ear, right?
Yeah, he's the minister, not the chancellor. Yeah,
that's the only real difference.
Get it right, everyone.
But we learn before too much longer that his name is Andel, and, well, we've been hearing his name off and on throughout as someone who is rewarding people for doing bad things, capital B, bad things. And as he seems a little bit shady, he sends Ark to clear monsters out of a couple of locations in Saria. And Ark pretty quickly meets Poco, who joins the party and goes along fighting with him. Poco is an interesting mechanical character because he's your buff engine.
Yeah, he's very good. Yeah.
I used him a lot for side healing and...
He has a drum that buffs attack and an ocarina that buffs speed, which are two of the most useful abilities in the game.
He gets the trombone.
Yes,
bomb, the atrophy bomb later in the game, and I think that's
a laser drum.
Yeah, the lion drum.
Oh yeah, that's right. He does. Yeah. Honestly, I thought those two were some of his best abilities. Like, I mean, like aside from the fact that the trombone thing had like a huge range on it, I just thought it was cool watching him to like play it and shoot like the bombs out of it. And
that's the cool thing about Poco. Most characters learn abilities just by leveling up. Poco finds new instruments around and uses those as his different abilities. His normal attack is he fights with cymbals, which is also pretty delightful. He's got a lot more personality to a lot of his animations and a lot of his voice lines than a lot of the other characters do. I'm curious if you all agree or disagree that he's a little, in my mind, he's one of the less flat characters in the game.
Yeah, he's my favorite.
He's one of my favorites, probably.
Yeah, Poco's the hero of this game. Sorry, Ark.
Yeah, and he has a little bit of an arc, you know, like he when Ark finds him, he was like hiding in the grass as his whole like platoon got slaughtered by monsters, right? And then by the end, he's like right behind Ark, like going into the thick of danger and stuff. So, you know, he grows a little bit as a character,
which is more than you can say for a lot of the characters in this game. Not just that they grow, but that they have an arc and you actually see them grow throughout the entire game.
Yeah,
I think he's the last character that has any interesting characterization, right?
Yeah, there's interesting background to some of the other characters, but I don't know that anyone else has so much of interest in what they have to say as Poco.
Yeah.
So sure enough, you defeat the monsters. There's a lot of this in the game where you go to a new location, you meet some kind of leader there who seems shady. And they send you to defeat some monsters to prove yourselves. I think that's in pretty much every continent that you go to. There's some similar loop to that, except for Chungara's.
Yeah, most of them. Yeah. Well, yeah, because Chungara's you have to go through part of the dungeon.
Forbidden Ruins.
Which we will get to for poor Ben's sake, if nothing else. As we get back, monsters are attacking the castle, and hey, Kukru is there, having promised to follow Ark, and you get your third party member, which with those three, you finally have kind of a functional party. You've got your buffer, your healer, and your all-around damage dealer. It will grow a bit more, but it's going to be those three for a hot minute. We also get a few scenes with Andel showing how evil he is, talking to an evil mirror. There are cutaways in this game that cut away to the villains saying mysterious villainous things. Usually not much of substance. Just a lot of mwahaha, we will get the MacGuffins before he does. It really is a lot of evil fluff. I feel like we're being hard on this game in some ways.
I think Ark the Lad deserves a little bit of heat.
Yeah.
The first one. I haven't played the second one. I like Ark the Lad, but like, I don't know. I think being hard in this game.
I think the fact that it's 10 hours is in its favor. That it's a short RPG.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
For sure. Yeah, you can kind of understand why they didn't want to bring it over originally. Just because it's such a I think it's a time and place thing too. Like, I think there's a lot of like small elements of this game that were probably really mind blowing in 95 when a lot of people were still playing like
orchestrated audio RPGs. And CG cutscenes alone. These were like innovations that Ark the Lad brought.
Yeah. Yeah. And the FMVs, like they're all very short, but you have a few where like you have like the airship taking off or things like that. And like, I'm sure that was like mind blowing at the time.
Yeah.
This series definitely grows as it goes on. I know at least Nick, I believe, has played Twilight of the Spirits, the PS2 entry into this game.
Oh yeah, I have.
I don't know if either of the rest of you have. Yeah.
Yeah, I've played it.
I was going to say, I'm guessing Audrey, you haven't. Since this is fresh for you.
Yeah.
So these games kind of grow in complexity after the first game. The first game is kind of this foundational, like I said, almost proof of concept for the second game. And it's got some really cool ideas, but you don't really see them brought into fruition until the sequel.
Yeah, and I will say, too, like, the story is just, it's very by the numbers. You know, the characters are one-dimensional, but the core elements, like the combat and the encounter design and all of that, are actually very solid. So you, even though you're, you know, there's not a lot to like keep you hooked in terms of like the narrative or characters, it's still like a fun experience, I think, playing through it. At least I had fun playing through it again this time.
I did make it into a podcast game for some of the grinding, but that's neither here nor there. I've spoken about this on Retro before. The idea that some games you listen to podcasts while you play, and that isn't necessarily a knock against them.
I watch television while playing it on my Steam Deck. So like, I mean, like there were some parts where I was grinding for over an hour or two, and I was like, well, this is perfect. My only real issue with the design is the experience system. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, I think that's, you know, maybe to Ben's point, that's kind of a time and place thing as well. But also the map design, some of them, like especially the science lab, where like they have these big staircases on either side, but there's really only like, there's only like one block you can get up. It was so frustrating with some of these. And like, you have all these really cool teammates and I just can't get them.
Which is hard when you're trying to level up some of the weaker ones, because you only get experience from actions.
Yeah.
So if you have someone who's not able to get into the fray, they're not going to level up much. And well, Chungara is never going to see the level up screen.
Yeah. And like, you got to put Ark first, because like the first person out is going to get swarmed. And so like only Ark can handle that. So
the big booty on him and all the counterattacks to make that work out.
Yeah, he's got that big old dump truck that they all want to hit on. And so you got to get him out there up front.
Yeah. And that's why he ends up being like two or three times as high a level as like everybody else.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah.
You're like looking at your levels and you're like, okay, everybody's around the high 20s. And then you go to Ark and he's like 42 and you're like, okay.
He's the only character I hit max level with in this playthrough. And it was just natural. It was never at any point trying to level up Ark. I was in fact trying to level up other characters most of the time.
Right.
Yeah, and you can solo like the whole game with him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a power.
If there's like a split area here where like here's one direction where there are some enemies and here's another direction where there are some enemies, it's usually like Ark and maybe Poco if I'm at all worried going one direction, and then the rest of the party going the other direction.
Yeah.
But yeah, from here, the king sends us to Milmana, the continent of Milmana, and Tokoye Forest, to be specific, Tokoye, where the king's brother went off to, speaking of a similar kind of in-demand kind event like Ark has been hearing about from this Ark ghoul. This is where we start to get into more and more of like the... This game is a very eco-friendly kind of game. And the big, you know, humans are evil thing feels straight out of Fern Gully. They use everything. They take too much from the land. They forget the face of their father. This is kind of the cause of everything going kind of poorly.
And I think this area is interesting because it's like the first time when you get out of that kind of like medieval or kind of Eastern fantasy kind of aesthetic to, you know, you get in the airship and then that takes you to Milmana, and then Milmana, like there's guys walking around with like assault rifles. And it's like, oh, wow, okay, this is a little bit of a like technology shock.
It's this jungle army that feels straight out of like a modern day or not far before modern day.
Yeah.
Which Ark the Lad will continue down that path of, you know, mixed technology plus some areas are sword and sorcery. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Some areas have buildings with giant screens on
them. We do actually see TVs in place later on in the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What a bizarre time period thing that they've made.
Yeah.
Like, very cool, but...
With Ark the Lad 2, like, it feels a lot more cohesive, but with this one, it's a little jarring.
Well, this one's weird, too, because, like, they didn't have time to really set up the setting.
Yeah.
Right? With, like, only a 10-hour game, you know, it's, like, really hard to have a unique setting and, like, not just, like, kind of dump it on the player. Yeah,
you just kind of experience it as it goes, which is kind of... It's kind of Ark the Lad's, speed. They do some of that in the second game and throughout, but they've got a little bit more time to let it breathe because you actually explore these areas and speak with people. Whereas in this game, there is no real exploration aside from like three areas, I want to say, where you get control of your character. Otherwise, you're traveling through a map that's a menu, going into places, getting cutscenes, and then getting fights, and then going back out to the world map to save.
Yeah, it's almost, I will say it almost feels like almost, you know, like an earlier part of like our world's history, like maybe more like World War One, or, you know, between World War One and World War Two, where you have a lot of country, you know, places in the world that are still almost like barely out of like feudal system. And then you have like Industrial Revolution and a lot of technology. So it kind of feels like that. So I think it's an interesting way to portray like a fantasy world that you have like high technology and more like of a traditional fantasy setting, like coexisting. Even though it, some of these jumps feel abrupt, I think they still, it never like took me out of the experience, I guess.
World War One's a really great example to use there too, because it was like the last war where we had cavalry still.
Yeah.
You know, but also like up against artillery divisions. So like very weird point in history. I think that tracks really well.
It seems to be divided partially by the location that you're in. Like when you're in Syria, this feels much more like a traditional medieval European kind of castle life situation, whereas, you know, you go to Milmana here and hey, this is kind of the Congo but with a military force expanding into it as best as they can. There you meet General Yagun, yet another person of questionable morality.
A little bit of a mustache twirler, you might call
complete
him.
With a
not questionable at all,
complete with a pet monkey,
evil,
which is maybe the best part of General Yagun. Is that he's got a little laughing, salacious crumb monkey who climbs on his shoulder. And once again, he sends you off to prove yourself into the forest. And sends a ninja after them to kill them as well, because why not? This one was kind of out of left field. It's just like, oh, and he's got a ninja and his friend ninja who is going to go try to kill.
Summon the ninjas.
Now... the only really important line I have in my notes for this is world's tallest train, because
oh, that train rules.
You roll up in a train that's like a quadruple decker, you know. It's
I think that's being like conservative. Like that thing's got to be like, I think that thing's like 6 or 7 stories tall. Like that thing is huge. It rules. It's the greatest
the
thing I've ever seen.
The mechanical designs in Ark the Lad are actually pretty legit throughout, even if they can be over the top.
Yeah, but it makes sense too, because like G-Craft, you know, they worked on Front Mission, and they were all from Messiah, so they worked on like Cybernator, so a lot of like mech games and stuff like that. So a lot of the artists and everything were really you know, big on machinery and mechanical designs. So I think that really comes through with a lot of the like technology parts of Ark the Lad, even with the first one.
The Silver Noah.
It's a phenomenal airship. It's kind of blocky in a cool way, like where it feels technologically advanced because it can fly in that shape.
Yeah, it's like a Front Mission mech. You know, it's like a bunch of cubes and rectangles squished together.
It's also got one of my favorite animations, which is when the door opens, it's like depressurizes and has this little tss sound. Mm-hmm.
It makes that
noise. That is one of the most satisfying noises out there. And then the little lip comes down so that you have something to walk across to get onto the airship landing.
Game is full of little details like that. It's really cool.
It's those little things that stand out more if you had been able to play this in its time, because there wasn't stuff like that in a lot of SNES animation. And this is the very beginning of PlayStation doing all of these little new bits with animation and with music.
It's like a 16-bit RPG, but like the way that you remember it being kind of is how I would say, like the music sounds are really high quality, and you've got all these little animation touches and visual effects that you couldn't actually do on most 16-bit hardware, but it still feels and looks a lot like a 16-bit game.
It's pretty cool in that way. Honestly, the soundtrack is a little bit of, like, it's got some bangers in it, I think. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the music's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
So from there, we actually get access to Tokoye Forest, and we find the forest spirit therein. The forest spirit is one of the guardians who hands off some information, including the fact that Yashua, Ark's father, was the king's brother and was crown prince, first in line for the throne at one point. Before he was sent off to, you know, kind of see to the end of the world, quote unquote.
Quick correction. She is not one of the guardians.
She's not. No, the forest spirit isn't. You're right. We get our first stone after Gogan, don't we?
Yeah. The quiz you take at the in the next continent is very specific about that not being a guardian.
She's just very helpful.
Yes. There are all kinds of different types of spirits to be had in Ark the Lad. I appreciate the correction because I never would have heard the end of it, and that's not what I need in my life. But before we go to this next area, we return to Palencia. This is where we meet the requisite cool character of any given RPG. Yeah. This is where we meet
cool
Tosh.
Guy.
Tosh is a samurai with orange hair and ridiculous attack power. He is basically the physical fighter of the Ark the Lad series, not just this game, but he is, whenever you are able to have him in your party, he is a rock solid physical attacker. But right now he's being imprisoned. It sounds like he was trying to stop the massacre of his clan at the minister's order.
Yeah, he was a guard. He was like one of them. He was part of the military, but then he like turned on them because he got an order to like get rid of his clan, I guess. Because I think his clan is like related to protecting the guardian.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to do that. So he got put in prison for that.
And Tosh is set to be executed for this. Mm-hmm. But immediately the party starts having doubts because the party, while kind of a, you know, a group of default personalities, they're not that dumb. they can tell when something's a little bit off, and they
at
definitely
least
sense.
Think Andel's the sus.
Yeah. He's sus.
Yeah, sus.
Andel is sus. this is where you hear guards mentioning Romalia trying to take over the world, a country that you had heretofore not heard of. But it's not necessarily the most important thing the guards do when they transform into monsters, which I believe is the first time we see humans transforming into monsters. Is that correct?
I think so.
Yeah.
This will eventually become a big thing. and in fact, a major plot point that stuff like this keeps happening. So once again, you're faced with a fight to go and rescue Tosh. Tosh decides to come with you after, you know, all kinds of destiny talk.
he like goes off on his own, I think. And then he like the spirit, like I don't know if it's the spirit of his clan or like the guardian, but like something talks to him when he's like on the hill, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, I have to go like run up and catch them basically before you get on the airship. Yeah.
But at first he was too cool.
Yeah. I have to be on my own. I have to go. I have my own path.
I mean, he's a samurai in a black robe. He has to be a little bit of a loner and be the cool guy for a little bit.
He'll come around.
But you do return back to Toville and find that it is burnt down and completely devoid of people. Toville being Ark and Kukuru's hometown. But there, Ark finds out that his father is alive.
Yes, because the random delivery man.
Yeah, a random delivery man comes in and delivers a letter that turns out to be from Ark's dad, which is where we get a lot of the Destiny talk. A lot of the Destiny talk.
Yeah, his dad is a huge Bungie fan. Loves Destiny.
Is this where we find out that the his dad was supposed to be the king, or is that?
Yeah, later? we find that out like right before, and then he kind of confirms it in his letter. And
they couldn't. If the game was a little bit longer, they might have let it linger. But they were like, okay, we need to drive this home. Let's give a little hint and then have the delivery man come here and basically confirm it.
Just convenient. But you'll also revisit. Well, maybe you will. If you know what's going on, you'll revisit Toville after every major event and get more letters from Yashua, as well as some pretty strong items, equipment. There's no weapons and armor in this game. You just have 4 slots through which you can equip accessories. There's a ton of these accessories and most of them are optional, but they can severely change how you play the game. Like, you know, the one that recovers MP for Ark every turn. There are some real heavy hitters, some that, you know, increase attack power by 10-20%, that you'll want to throw on Tosh and just watch him do even more work than he can on a normal.
Yeah. And I think each character has like 2 specific items that, yeah, are unique to them that only they can use, and those are usually pretty useful. Like, I know there's one for Chungara that makes it so he gets all the experience from his summons, which is nice. And there's some other like unique ones.
But before we meet Chungara, we are told to go to this monolith to get a book that will help guide Ark's way as he goes. For the next MacGuffin hunt that his father gives him, which is to find the guardians and who have turned their backs on humanity, and to get their blessings and their stones, these power stones that will kind of lead him on his path and on his journey. So you go to this monolith in Saria, and you battle you're drawn into another prove your worth battle with a weird glowy giant holding an old guy, as I listed down in my in my notes. But I don't know about you all, but this was the first difficulty spike for me. Did anyone have a rough time with this guy? Or
no, it's like the first real boss battle.
I had to do it twice, I think.
I ended up doing it like 3 times because I didn't grind enough, because I was getting impatient and I was like, I can take this guy, it'll be fine. Because he can drop spells that hit your entire party and will almost always drop one before you have a chance to act. That will shave off like 25 hit points off of everyone in your party. He counterattacks everything that you throw with him with physical attacks. And you have to be really careful with positioning and healing. And it's entirely possible, due to his high hit point range, to run out of MP on your healer before he's done for. I ended up winning with 1 character alive on their last attack before they died.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Climactic.
Yeah, it felt really, really impactful.
Should we all try and guess which character was left alive?
Ark.
I think it was Ark who got the last hit off.
I'm shocked.
Figures.
Shocking, truly. But the quote-unquote book that your father sent you about was actually this old man trapped in the giant, an over 3,000-year-old fella named Gogan, who is your wizard for this game.
Yeah, he's kind of like a Master Roshi kind of figure, but less perverted. He doesn't really do any...
Not perverted, but equally goofy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's the one who helps, you know, take those stones and guide you to your next location every time you get one of those guardian stones. Because that's pretty much going to be the rest of the game, is going to where these guardians are, getting their stones, and letting one lead you into the next one.
And the guardian stones are elements.
Yes, these are elemental powers. Each one fuels one of Ark's elemental spells, and he has access to every element in the game. So you actually see these little guardians pop up anytime he casts a spell before he actually casts it.
Yeah, it's just really cool. It reminds me of like Golden Sun or something, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish they weren't so goofy looking, but they probably weren't like back in 95. But like to me now, I think they're like really cute and goofy looking.
Yeah, they all kind of have like a squat kind of proportions to them. So and they all have like a little staff. Or
yeah,
whatever
I think
they hold.
They're cute.
Yeah,
they're like do think they're cute.
They're like the indie Legend of Mana or Mana series.
Elementals. Yeah, they do. They do look like the spirits from the Mana games, yeah, a little bit.
They're just a little bit more indie about it. One of them's got like a pinhead situation going on while still being adorable, which is an interesting mix to pull off.
Yeah, they're almost like kind of like Yoda, like if Yoda was like the like four different elements or whatever.
Yeah, you got your Earth Yoda, your Water Yoda, your Fire Yoda.
But Gogan sends us off to Alatos, something of a Middle Eastern influenced town, a continent, where we meet, for better or for worse, we meet Changara. And Changara, we've got to hit the brakes on for a minute.
Yeah, I don't know if this is like a working designs thing. Like he's clearly supposed to be like a goofy, like comedic relief character, mm-hmm. but the like. Speech, you know, the way he talks.
Oh, yeah,
I'm not sure if that was in the original or if that's more of a working designs addition.
It's like it's a 90s racism thing.
Yes. Right?
Yeah.
Well, he comes from a different part of the world than I do, so obviously it's okay to make fun of him.
Yeah, that's basically what it seems to be working with, and I'm tempted to say it's a working designs decision primarily.
Yeah,
because this is the kind of thing that working designs would do, pretty clearly in their games. Changara speaks in sentence fragments. He's greedy, miserly, only does things that benefit himself. He's a merchant who's always trying to play the angles and get more money out of something. All
Tosh
of which add up to
goat breath.
Yeah. Tosh, was it that called him goat breath? Yeah. Feels pretty.
Yeah. Not great.
Pretty not great. Yeah.
Horrible. Horrible. I was like, I audibly gasped when it happened.
So we don't necessarily stan a Changara.
No. Even though I think his action set is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he's a summoner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is very cool.
And he's actually super useful, because mm-hmm. you can, having, like, he can summon eventually at the end of the game, what is it, like, five or six different monsters, and that's, like, doubling your party size, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just act as full party members when he summons them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they have their own health bars and their own mana pools and everything, and that's just, like, super useful to have, because now you have like double the amount of actions than you would normally have on a map. And even
their
not,
actions give experience to Changara if you have the accessory,
the
equipment,
king's
right?
image, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And that is pretty useful. They're not all like super great in combat, but even just having them to like use items on other characters or something is pretty good.
Yeah, I also like that, like, one of them introduces a mechanic. I mean, like, it's only really useful for, like, one fight. But, like, the Mop Fly that, like, summons spaces.
Yeah,
That's, like, just a cool idea. It sucks that it doesn't really pan out. But, like, I loved it for that fight. That was really cool.
There are, like, two locations where you can use that to get to items that you otherwise couldn't reach.
Yeah.
And one of them is nowhere near when you acquire Changara and probably won't remember to go back there because the items there might not be that useful. It's an interesting character mechanically, but it is hard to deal with in 2024, especially how he kind of pans out as a character.
The overt racism?
The overt racism is hard to deal with, yes.
Yeah.
But for better or worse, he tells you that he will lead you to the Light Guardian, the first guardian that you seek, if you fetch a summon pot for him in
Forbidden
Ruins. Thank you. I was struggling to remember the name of the optional 50 floor dungeon. You have
it's
to
a
go.
Very Aladdin moment, like go to the Cave of Wonders and give me the lamp kind of thing.
Very, very much so, yes. And it fits in the same kind of respect for the real life lands these are based on.
Yes, yes.
It's also really like a 100 floor dungeon because it's not like you can just like go, oh, okay, I'm done. Like you have to walk back out.
Yeah, you got to climb down and back out. The summon pot is around floor 5, I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you go all the way down through all 50 floors, you can unlock the strongest summon in the game and arguably the strongest character in the game, Choco. But sometimes you're
an anime
unlucky.
Schoolgirl.
Yes, the anime schoolgirl that they decided to throw in there. Ben, how did you feel about the 50-floor dungeon?
Yeah, so I went through... I came back to do the 50-floor dungeon because it was towards... I think after I'd gotten all but the Fire Guardian. And I was like, okay, this is a good time. Like, I need to grind anyway. So I went back to the dungeon. And what's interesting, too, about the dungeon is that it's not like... It doesn't progress... The difficulty curve in it doesn't progress, like, floor per floor. So like a lot of the floors actually have really easy enemies, and then at certain points they'll just be like a really hard battle. So like, you know, every 10 floors or so until you get towards the end, and then they're all like pretty high level and difficult. But I got through all the way down to floor 50, but then I died to Choco because I only had Tosh and Ark still alive at that point. And she like when she hits you, you get like a blind status. And then, you know, if you can't hit her, then, you know, she'll just wail on you. And then that was it. So then I had to, you know, it takes you when you lose in this game, you go straight back to your last save, which typically isn't an issue because you can save before pretty much every battle. But you can't save while you're in the 50 floor dungeon. So I had to then go all the way back to my save before the dungeon, redo all of it, and then go all the way back through the 50 floors that I'd just gone through, because once you beat it, you have to go back the way you came. So that was a very frustrating experience. I think I spent maybe 10 hours total on my playthrough, and I think I spent 4 hours of that just doing the 50-floor dungeon.
You're made of something else, Ben, let me tell you.
But it is a cool experience. It definitely, like, it feels like something they added because they realized, like, oh, like, the game is... Because without doing that, the game is really short. Like, you could beat it in, like, 7 or 8 hours if you don't do the dungeon. So it kind of feels like a way to extend the length of the game. But I will say that a lot of the scenario, like, the combat encounters and stuff in the dungeon are pretty interesting. There's some that are designed clearly more for you to just get to the stairs and go to the next floor rather than stay and fight. So it does like allow you to kind of play with the battle system a little more than most of the story fights do. So I like that part of it. But
yeah, this is really the only time that they play with the mechanics of what your goal is. They'll play with that a little bit more in future games, but it's pretty cool to see that they're at least thinking about it, even if this is just kind of a brutal endurance test.
Yeah. I think if it would have been better if they had checkpoints every 10 floors or something, that I think would make it a lot more manageable. But it's still a neat idea. And it is optional content. You don't have to do it. So.
Yeah, but it is pretty cool to see Choco because she returns throughout the series, actually. As far forward as Twilight of the Spirits, I believe she shows up again.
Yep.
I don't know much about End of Darkness. The copy that I bought doesn't work, and by all accounts, it's not a very good game.
Yeah, that's good.
It's probably
it's for the best. It's for the best.
The series went down on an action RPG note that was not, by all accounts, the best way for the series to go out.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Unless you count the gacha game that lasted about a year. Yeah, poor Ark the Lad, wonderful series. Hopefully one day we'll see it alive again. But from here, you know, you essentially get the pot, which is what allows Chungara to summon all of these different entities. he starts off with just that Mofly and Kellak, which is another healer, which I actually really appreciated. I used him a fair amount to just get some extra MP out of out of this.
Yeah, all my homies love Kellak.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's cool because he's like a trio of little like gnomes or something. I don't even know like what he is. Yeah, like
little spear-wielding gnomish dudes. Absolutely.
The dust spirits from Spirited Away or something.
Oh, yeah, they do kind of look like that, yeah.
They've got that vibe to them.
Sorry, Patapons.
Patapon, yeah. I can see Patapons.
But they have like troll hair. Like
yeah, they really do.
But sure enough, Chengar is good to his word, sends you to the Light Guardian, and then has a crisis of conscience because he remembers Ark's dad coming here 10 years ago and telling him, "Hey, I need you to help my son when he comes around." And Changara, as the caricature that we know him as, is mostly out for himself and doesn't want to do so. But he eventually convinces himself and Changara joins you, as your next party member who, you know, for good or ill, I like his summoning abilities. I didn't find myself getting as much use out of them in the maps that I really needed them to, unfortunately.
Yeah. I love the animation though of him like throwing his hand over the top of it, like shaking it up before he summons. Like I thought that was really cool.
His little Daedicoi. That little voice line is more likable than the rest of Chungara's personalization. Gogan grabs his staff, lights up the light stone that you get after the guardian tells you much of the same kind of humanity is the worst. Kind of things. This is pretty much how all of the guardians go. Humanity is the worst, but Ark, you seem cool, so I'm gonna lend my power to you.
It's not even that. Ark is just like, but not everyone's bad, and they're like, yeah, all right,
that's good.
All right, buddy.
Yeah. It's a good point.
And that stone sends you off to East Anidar in Graishane, which seems to be a place with fierce warrior monks that the party is kind of afraid of for some reason. They seem to be worried that these monks are going to be unfriendlies and get real nervous about them before heading over that way, which is interesting. They don't really explain why there's big concern over them when they've gone into much darker places, much more questionable company and never been worried about it. But yeah, from there you head off to Graishane, and this is the kind of Shaolin monk chapter, the Shaolin monk continent. There are scenes with an archmonk who seems to be the untrustworthy authority figure of this chapter, who seems concerned that the Ark's party is going to tamper with the Guardian somehow. So he sends a monk named Iga to intercept them.
No, not the Guardian, the books.
Yeah,
the
their secret texts.
Yes, their secret texts is what he's worried about.
Yeah. And they're like clueless to that. They're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, Ark's party has no idea what this is. They're just there for the Guardian.
The Guardian.
And you have to fight don't you fight a duel against Iga?
Yes, you fight a duel against Ark? Iga with just Ark, which means you destroy Iga.
Yeah.
He doesn't have total healing. Even if he does manage to get your HP down, it's not a problem.
It was like, I actually felt bad for Iga. Like during that fight, I was like, oh man, in front of his whole clan, just bodied.
But he is a pretty formidable character. I would say like after Ark and Tosh, he's like number three.
He has the coolest ability set. He just goes really in, does. Marks everybody, and like shoots lasers out of his nips, I assume.
He is, if you haven't guessed, he is your seventh and final party member. And Iga, if it weren't for the fact that he's going to be lower level than everyone else, could be comparable to someone like Tosh. Like, he can deal some serious damage, and his ability set is really stinking cool. He's got some non-traditional actions, as well as the ability to do area of effects around him, which not everyone gets to do.
Yeah, my biggest problem with him, he's a little slow. He doesn't have as big of a movement range, and he can't jump as far and stuff. So he sometimes has a hard, difficult time getting to the center of the battle. But
which makes the level offset even harder to deal with, because he can't get to the battle to get that experience he needs.
Yeah, but he's pretty tanky, and he is pretty strong, and his moves are really, really cool.
Yeah, so he can serve a pretty good purpose in your party, provided you get him the experience that he needs. I like Iga. He is very traditional, like, I am a Shaolin monk kind of character. He doesn't have much going on, especially being introduced last. There's less game to go through once you're introduced to him. But he's got a pretty cool design, and yeah, combat design is really great with Iga. But sure enough, and this is my favorite detail, after this fight, the Archmonk comes out, and Kukru can smell that he's a monster.
Oh, I loved that. I loved it so much. Just she's smells like, nice the try, X-Lax. That's what we said in the 90s, by the way.
If anyone was wondering, this is period appropriate speech.
Right.
as is expected, you beat down the Archmonk, head up the mountain and get the Earthstone from the Earth Guardian, who says very similar stuff to what everyone else says. At this point, I'm moving a little bit quicker through these because the Guardians are all pretty similar.
And I feel like too, these the last two Guardians, like, it's a lot quicker than there's not as many story events and stuff. Yeah.
From here, we are sent off to Nidel, which is our requisite tournament arc. Where you actually get to choose who's going to serve in the tournament and who's going to do the work to actually get the Wind Orb. And I'm curious who everyone chose.
Really?
I mean, I chose Tosh.
Oh, shit, really?
I went with Tosh, and I had a blast with it.
Oh. I picked Kukur at first, and then I switched to Ark because she just was not...
She wasn't up to it.
Yeah.
It's so sad, because, like, Kukur would have been... Like, when you introduced her as, like, strictly the healer, I was like, oh, I kind of treated her more like the martial arts type, you know, where she was like, she just had, like Ark, she has like a couple different abilities, but I kept trying to play her like that throughout the game, and I couldn't.
And
it was a bummer.
Yeah, it's a shame that the game won't agree.
Yeah.
I did Ark.
Yeah, I did Ark too, just because.
You know what's interesting is you get a special accessory for beating the whole thing with Poco.
Oh.
Really?
I didn't know that.
Which means you ride the lion drum pretty much the whole way through.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
But you have to level that boy up in a way that I was not able to in order to get.
What does the accessory do?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Oh man, this is going to bug me.
I'm going to find it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, we also get to meet, the coolest dude ever, Rock Rocktle.
Yeah.
And he's like the guy that runs the tournament. And I thought he was pretty cool. But mostly just his name. Did anybody else have a favorite Rock Rocktle moment?
Pretty much the whole reveal about it turning out that they're like, surprise, surprise, he's not on the level.
He's a demon or whatever. It's like, yeah, oh man, like, I'm shocked.
Like everyone else. Like, I'm surprised Ark and Kukuru don't, like, at some point just question the existence of their entire world. Like, is everybody a demon? Like, what the hell?
Oh my goodness. So the accessory that Poco gets is called the Toy Ring. And in Ark the Lad 1, it is a Poco exclusive accessory that makes Shift Flute affect the entire map.
Whoa, that's pretty good.
And for anyone wondering at home, the Shift Flute is an ability that makes everyone face the same direction Poco is facing.
That's pretty crazy.
That's insane. Like, the entire map?
What a reward for fighting that whole thing through with Poco.
Well, I think the positioning does matter in battle, though, yes. right? Like, you do yeah. take more damage from behind and stuff like that.
Can you dodge from behind?
Yeah, I don't think you can block or dodge if you get attacked.
No, you can block. You can block from behind if you get attacked from behind, but I don't think you can dodge from behind. If you get attacked from behind.
I've been playing a little bit of Ark the Lad too, and I know you can dodge from behind there, so I'm skewed.
Oh, interesting.
My memory is skewed.
Hmm.
There are some mechanical changes. Definitely
affects damage, though.
Yes.
Yeah, and that you can't change position. That's another thing. Like in Tactics Ogre, Final Fantasy Tactics, you can change your character's position after taking a move, but in this you can't. So it is somewhat useful to have a move to change people's position, but
if you hold R1, you can actually change your facing without moving.
Oh, you what? Can?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
News for the party.
Oh my God. Oh, but you can only do that before an action.
Correct.
Right?
You can't. If you attack, you are facing that direction.
Okay. Interesting.
It apparently does something different in Arc 2, because the interesting thing is all the things you get in Arc 1 will carry over into Arc 2, and we'll talk about what specifically carries over next episode. But yeah, as everyone said, the MC is a monster like everyone else, and has apparently been using this tournament. He will hire a champion that he says is the champion from last year. Whoever wins technically gets the stone, but the MC kills them, takes the stone back, and hires a lookalike for the next year in the tournament.
Wild Yakuza level just bullshit.
Absolutely yeah. amazing plan.
Galaxy brain stuff right there.
And he doesn't even really know what this orb is. He doesn't really care. It's just his way to fix fights, I guess.
That's the wild part to me. Gogan gets the wind orb and starts like messing around with it, and they're like, oh, it kind of like rattles a little bit. I'm like, why did people even want this thing?
And then he drops it.
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out to be the wind orb inside a rock, functionally?
So,
yeah, he was like imprisoned in there, I think, the Guardian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My question to you guys,
suck.
Do you guys think that Gogan knew that?
I think he did. Yeah. I think it's trying to imply that like he's acting like he's being like a goober, but he actually knew that he was in there. Yeah.
That's how I felt. Like I was like, I don't know. I think this guy knows what he's, you know, like he definitely knows a little bit more than his Roshiness would lead you to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So from here we move into the our next stop is the Desert of Zariban. Which actually has quite a bit of story development, simply because this is the last place before you go to the end of the game. You're greeted by a member of the Saryu clan, who says he was sent by Yashua to take care of you all, give you a home base to work from as you're looking for... I don't have noted which orb this
is. Water Guardian.
Yep,
yes.
Water.
Yeah, the Water Guardian, who I believe is the one with a... I can't remember the name of that smoking apparatus anymore.
Hookah?
Hookah. Yes. Yes. A big fuzzy troll with a hookah and six arms.
Yes.
One of my favorite designs for one of the guardians.
It rules. It rules.
Essentially, this desert used to be fertile ground until about 1,000 years ago, when a merchant set up a mining operation, and following the Fern Gully story that we've set up for the rest of this, completely depleted the land of anything useful and turned it into a desert. Which is not the worst thing that happens to the Saryu village.
No, definitely not.
Because as you approach and get ready to kind of be welcomed, a whole bunch of lasers from the sky come down and just absolutely wipe out the village. Is it ever explained where these lasers come from?
Well, there's like a... Because right after that, you fight like the military guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think isn't that part of like they're like developing a weapon? And I think they're related to like Romalia, right?
Yes.
OK, yeah. So I think they
and
just
Romalia has advanced technology.
Yeah.
As we've been finding.
Yeah, it almost when this happened, I was like wondering if it was kind of like referencing like maybe like the Gulf War. Just because you have the, you know, the like desert country setting, and then this bigger foreign military force coming and just destroying the you know, town. That would have, you know, and G-Craft with Front Mission and everything, there's a lot of political commentary in those games. Not so much in Ark the Lad, but that's just what came to mind, and that would have been fresh in, like, 95.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
The reason that they give for the attack is to get some keys to the Water Shrine. Presumably to stop Ark. They don't really do much with it, because they get beaten down by Ark's crew, who by this point is something of a powerhouse. In order to get to this point, your party has to be pretty much unstoppable. The Waterstone, meanwhile, leads us back to Saria for the final Firestone, the Fire Guardian, which is promised to be somewhere in Saria.
And he's sad.
The saddest of guardians.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, your party is no longer welcome there after Andel has more or less taken over and made it into a military state. The king, who has seemed like mostly a stand-up kind of dude, has been losing power steadily throughout the course of this game.
Yeah, I think he has like an illness or something, right? Yeah. And it's, implied he's being like poisoned or dark magic or something like that, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, he's got an evil minister. Something is being done to him.
Yeah.
Also, you still have free reign to use the kingdom's airship.
Oh, right, because the pilot answers to the king and not the minister.
Right.
I think is how they heard it.
But you sneak into a biolab under the castle. You find the Fire Guardian being held and used for power, essentially, in the secret biolab. None of the other guardians have been in such dire straits. All of them have just kind of been in their stones, turning their backs on humanity. The Fire Guardian, meanwhile, has been used up as an energy source for who knows how long.
Yeah. Andel, clearly a fan of Final Fantasy VI.
Yes, this Esper is being farmed.
It's like, oh, that Kefka guy, he had some interesting ideas.
But this biolab is also kind of where you figure out that there are, you know, these experiments to turn people into monsters being done, which will become a bigger deal in the next game. But sure enough, as you go down and confront the scientist in the biolab, everyone in there turns into monsters and gives you the fight, the aforementioned fight with two little single square staircases. To try to get to.
And you think it's going to be two squares wide, but it's not.
No, it's a tiny little thing to fit through.
And enemies have like range to move.
Yeah, you've got a couple of flying enemies who can just kind of come in at you from different angles that you just can't get to.
I did not like that fight.
It was not a favorite.
No. Nor the fight after it, but
continue. Oh no.
Yeah, the next one is like one of the tougher fights in the game. Yeah.
I'm curious which one you're referring to.
Oh, the next one. The
very next one.
Yeah, the penultimate elevator fight, yeah.
Yes. Well, first we have the aforementioned elevator scene though.
Oh, that's as we're right. Escaping that's here. Right. Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's
yeah,
the
yeah.
one that I that's the my most annoying fight. because it doesn't make sense to me, but
yeah, essentially, the head scientist hits self-destruct for the entire castle, it seems like.
Yeah, which rules. I love that, by the way. That's my favorite thing in the whole world.
And this is where like,
we're in a bio lab in the basement of a castle. Let's hit the self-destruct button
and just take the whole thing down.
Yeah. Like, what is happening in this game?
It's a very umbrella move to do that.
Yeah.
And as and as your party tries to escape, Ark and Kukuru, for some reason, decide to jump off the elevator and fight the monsters that are left down on the floor.
It doesn't make any sense. They're already on the elevator. Yeah,
they could have just rode it on up.
Yeah, hit the bricks, guys. You don't have to stay.
But as such, you get a couple of fights with just Ark and Kukuru. which is where you prove whether or not your levels for Ark are good enough, and you also prove that Ark can solo this game if you get through this.
The strategy here is to make Kukuru hang back and bring Ark all the way to the front, and then just like kind of like spot heal with Kukuru.
Yeah, as he like counters his way through the entire
counter cleaves. It's ridiculous.
There are also a couple of revelations here. One, the proper revelation that the minister was sent from Romalia to help them conquer the world. Romalia is the bad guy country. They are the evil empire, and they will not really be appearing so much in this part of the series. And also find out that the king actually forced Joshua, Ark's father, to leave and go investigate all these world-ending possibilities so that the king could have the throne, kind of half coerced by Andel, but also feeling like he's got some guilt over it. He feels like even though he was seduced to it, this is still definitely his fault, which he probably should.
Yeah. I mean, we can give him grace, but yeah, it's his fault.
But you are saved from the castle by the Silver Noah and its pilot Chopin, who we haven't really talked about. Or Chopin. I'm going to go with Chopin.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Who is
a man with many useful information.
Yeah,
that is true.
He always seems to have an extra little bit of information that you need when you're going to the next place. And he rescues the party throughout the series more times than you can count. He is the real hero of the Ark the Lad series, Chopin, the airship pilot. From here, this is where we get the TV scene, because we see Andel on the TV blaming Ark and company for killing the king and finally making them completely no longer welcome in Saria. And Andel uses this to fully finalize the military state he's been trying to form this whole time. So basically, Saria is in pretty bad shape at this point. And in order to get back in and, you know, extinguish the flame now that they've got all five Guardian Stones, and to fight the Ark Ghoul and to acquire the Ark, A-R-K Ark, which is kind of a Pandora's box MacGuffin that we only really learn about towards the end of the game. I'm not sure I even fully understand what it does, if I'm being perfectly honest.
They get some kind of like power from it, I guess, right? Like it opens and they get, it says that Ark gets like the power of bravery or something like that.
And Kukuru gets divine power.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And then Andel like comes and takes it away after that.
Yes. But not before they sneak in disguised as Himoji, which is one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
Himoji are these little kind of goblin-esque characters who are monsters in the game, whose main ability is when they attack you, they also turn you into a Himoji. So they set up this big elaborate story about the prince of a surrounding kingdom coming to offer their condolences for the loss of the king. And he's assisted by all of his Himoji retainers, which is Ark's entire crew, disguised as Himoji that have slight little affectations that make them look like themselves. Which is just delightful sprite work to me.
Yeah, very, very cool touch. Very nice touch.
And they sneak in, and this is kind of where the end game happens. Going in to get the Ark, I'm guessing this is the fight you were talking about, Ben?
Yeah, with all the demons.
With like six demons sitting on you, two of which are more powerful than the other four, which are already pretty dang strong. And it takes place outside of this waterfall with all these rocks kind of scattered about. But ultimately, everyone can get at you really easily if they want to. There's no stopping you getting overwhelmed by these demons, and you just have to be high enough level and know enough about what they're going to do to stop them from killing the most vulnerable members of your party. What made this so difficult to you, Ben? Was it just the overwhelming power of those guys, or...
Yeah, I mean, I think like the 50th floor battle against Choco is harder. But just, you know, this is I think the battle with the most of those demons in the game, and they're like pretty much the strongest like regular enemy that you'll fight. And because they can fly and they have that attack that's like the divine, I forget what it's called, but it's like a, it has pretty good range and it does a lot of damage, so they can hit like through your units. So even if you have like a melee guy blocking them off, they can kind of hit your back, your guys behind them. So it's just a, you know, challenging fight in that regard.
This is also around when we get Ark and Kukuru's kiss kind of out of the blue moon here. When they're going up to extinguish the flame, they confess their love for each other, and no one saw that coming.
Yeah, it's very odd.
Yeah, we're in this real charged situation here. I gotta kiss somebody, I guess, so you'll do.
you are the person nearby. When we do go to get this arc, our final battle is not what I was expecting. Our final battle is a mirror match against versions of your party, put forth as like a test by the arc to make sure that you're worthy of holding the arc. Did anyone have any troubles with this fight?
No.
I'm going to guess not.
Not really.
Because after fighting those demons, this is a walk in the park by comparison.
Not only that, but you know your party well enough that you know who you should be targeting here.
Yes.
Like who you should be focusing down first.
And they all start in a line. And so you can like just Art, you know, if Art goes first, you can just have him do like one of his attacks that'll hit like all of them at once.
Just a big old five space gale flash or whatever.
Yeah, and then, you know, that'll take out a few of them, and then they're, like, at a huge disadvantage after that. So, yeah. It's an interesting idea. I just don't think it works as, like, an ult, you know, like, the final boss. It's a little anticlimactic.
But the greatest enemy is often ourselves.
True. All right, okay. I mean, Mortal Kombat knew not to let the last fight be a mirror match, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a disappointment, but from a gameplay perspective. But from there, we actually get a lot of setup for the next game in the final moments here. Toville Village just kind of lifts up into the sky. This big old plateau kind of forms up. Huh?
Perfectly normal.
Perfectly normal.
Yep.
Plateau just kind of shoots up out of there. And it's a big, almost cataclysmic event happening that causes Toville to rise up. And they decide in pretty short order that Kukuru should stay there to keep a watch on the seal over the demon. I believe it's a seal over the Dark One now.
That's what they say. Yeah.
And yes, there is a Dark One. If it wasn't mentioned earlier, it's because it's a generic Dark One. We learn nothing about it in this game. It is just a being of great evil to watch out for that doesn't really get a lot of time until the end of the game because he is Sir appearing in the next game. So on the way out, you know, you're ambushed by Andel, who takes the Ark. This part of the island shoots up. Ark and Co. hop on the Silver Noah and go off to continue doing adventurous, heroic things while Kukuru stays to keep watch on the seal. And that's about where we end. Is there anything else that anyone thought was interesting in these ending moments? Anything missing?
No, I think it's like the most FMV that they have in the game. So
yes.
They're kind of like dazzling you at the end, which is a nice reward, you know, for finishing the game and everything. So.
Okay. So from here, next episode, we're going to be stepping into Ark the Lad 2. And I was curious if anyone had any expectations. I know, Ben, you've played it, but it sounds like this is going to be brand new for you, Audra and Nick. How much do you know about the second game going into it?
I know nothing.
Only what the anime showed, but I know that they altered some stuff, so. Yeah.
You at least know about Elk, the new main character that we're going to be meeting.
Yes.
There will be a lot to cover next time, because while this was a little 10-hour game, Ark the Lad 2 is 40, 50 hours. A much more robust RPG that
we'll be doing. Fully featured game. Yeah.
Yes.
And the reason why, like, Ark the Lad, still even in Japan, is, like, considered this classic series is definitely because of Ark the Lad 2. Yeah. That's the one everybody really likes, and it is really, really one of the best RPGs on the PlayStation, I would say. So
it's kind of your Empire Strikes Back style glow up.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I'm excited, not for the 40 to 50 hour part, because I am I'm betting that an Aiden Chronicles key comes in during the next 2 weeks. But I am excited to play it, especially after playing this first one. I don't particularly think this is a very good game, Ark the Lad 1, but I do think that, like, as a setup for the next game, it works pretty well. And I like a lot of the mechanics and stuff that they set up. I think I agree with Ben that, like, mechanically, it's a very strong game.
Yeah, and there's a lot of room to grow on it that we will see very soon, which is pretty fantastic because it's already, you know, starting out pretty strong. There aren't a lot of tactical RPGs like this that take the traditional RPG trappings and put those into a tactical RPG, which I think is pretty cool.
And Ark the Lad 2 leans into that even harder.
Absolutely. It kind of becomes how the series works, is traditional RPG layout with tactical battles, which is pretty cool. But today we're not talking about Ark the Lad 2. In fact, I think we've about exhausted what we can talk about from Ark the Lad 1. for a 10-hour game, it packs some punch here and there. Coming soon to Retro Encounter, not only do we have next episode Ark the Lad 2 on the docket, in May we will have episodes on Persona 3 Reload, RPG Obsessions with a special guest. I'm not sure if that's announced yet, so I'm just going to kind of let that linger. As well as a two-part journal on Omori. Really cool stuff coming up. I will only be hosting Ark the Lad 2, so let that judge, you know, how excited you are for future episodes, I guess. If you want to reach us, you can email us at retro@rpgfan.com. We absolutely love, you know, feedback, whether it's through email, through reviews on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, whatever you have. We love feedback, especially positive feedback. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube as RPG Fan on some and RPG FanCom on others. You can also join the RPG Fan Discord, which is a cool place to hang out with lots of cool people. We have a shop at rpgfan.com/shop. Have all kinds of cool merch, apparel, stuff like that. Most of us probably have some kicking around. We also have two other podcasts. Every other week we have Random Encounter, about current events and randomness. Every other week we have Rhythm Encounter about music. RPG music, which is always a delight. Otherwise, if you want to reach us individually, we all have some manner of contact information. So let's start with Audra Bowling. How can people reach you?
Oh, you can reach me at email at audrab@rpgfan.com.
Nick, how can people reach you?
You can reach me at Blue Sky. Nick Mann writes bluesky.com, I think.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And Ben.
You can reach me at benloganlove@gmail.com.
And that's it for us tonight. We will see you all again next week. But until then, good night. Be kind to yourself out there.